Have you ever been like completely sucked into a story? You know, one that just gets you. Maybe like the Amazon Prime series, The Summer I Turned Pretty. I mean, yeah, it's got the beaches, the first kisses, the Taylor Swift songs. It's all there. But it feels like there's something deeper going on, right? It seems to pull in Gen Z with the soundtrack and everything, but also Gen X with that whole nostalgia for being a teenager, love, heartbreak, all of it. It just hits differently.
Oh, absolutely. It taps into something really universal. Those big emotions we all remember, or maybe are even going through now. And today we're actually going to take a deep dive into this really fascinating Psychology Today article. It looks at The Summer I Turned Pretty, not just as, a simple teen romance, but more as this compelling exploration of stuff like attachment wounds, grief, and just that intense emotional roller coaster of first love.
Yeah, so our mission today really is to use attachment theory as a kind of lens to try and understand why these characters do what they do. Why are their relationships so messy, so relatable, sometimes so frustrating? Like, have you ever watched something and just wondered, what is driving this character? Why do they push people away like that? Or why do they cling so hard? Or get stuck in that love triangle? Well, this deep dive is definitely for you. Think of it as a bit of a shortcut to understanding those really complex emotional patterns we see on screen. And let's be real, sometimes in our own lives too. Okay, so let's peel back the layers here. We're heading to Cousins Beach, but like with a psychologist's map, our source, this article, it points out that if we look at each character through attachment theory, we get this much richer understanding of how they love, how they cope, how they grieve.
Exactly. And what's so interesting is how attachment theory, which, basically describes how we form bonds, how we deal with intimacy, it really gives us a kind of blueprint for why characters act the way they do. These patterns, these styles, they often get formed really early in life, right? In those first relationships. And they end up guiding how these characters respond to love, to loss, to family stuff. It helps us see the why behind their biggest choices, even the ones that seem, totally confusing on the surface. It's like understanding their emotional wiring.
That emotional wiring idea really clicks when you look at the heart of the show, that love triangle. Everyone talks about it. The article breaks down how Belly, Conrad, and Jeremiah, how their different attachment styles clash, not just in romance, but with grief, with family. Let's start with Conrad Fisher. The article calls him the epitome of avoidant attachment. What does that actually look like in the show, especially when things get tough for him?
Oh, he really is a textbook example. When his mom, Susanna, gets sick, his immediate reaction is to pull inward. He pushes people away, keeps all those feelings bottled up tight. He even has panic attacks, but completely in silence because he seems absolutely convinced that being vulnerable is like dangerous, a weakness he can't afford. So he isolates himself. He thinks he's protecting others, maybe, but he ends up building these huge
I mean,
walls.
and watching that is just, yeah, it's heartbreaking because his stoicism, his distance just keeps breaking Belly's heart. She wants that closeness, that emotional connection, and he can't give it to her. Not in the way she needs it anyway. He might be physically present, but emotionally he's checked out. Creates that awful push-pull thing. Does the article like touch on whether people maybe misunderstand his reasons or if he genuinely thinks he's protecting them?
That's a really good point. And yeah, the article kind of implies that misinterpretation happens all the time. See, from Conrad's view, he's probably thinking he is protecting them. He's taking the hit, carrying the burden, so they don't have to see his pain. But for someone like Belly needing connection, his pulling away feels like straight up rejection. It's that classic avoidant trap, Trying to protect yourself just pushes others away. Now, if we shift gears to Jeremiah, his brother, the article pegs him as having an anxious, preoccupied style. He's always needing reassurance, terrified of being abandoned, right?
Totally. You see it in those big gestures he makes, sometimes kind of impulsive ones, like that sudden marriage proposal to Belly. It felt like such a rush, like he needed to lock things down immediately. He's always looking for that confirmation, like, are we okay? Am I still your person? And after Susanna dies, he steps right into that role of emotional glue, trying to hold the family together. It's almost like his grief turns into this desperate mission to stay close, to prove he's essential. And it's interesting. Beneath all that charm, that warmth, you still feel that kid who felt like he was living in Conrad's shadow, just wanting to be seen, to be loved for him.
And that's a really important layer. His impulsiveness, like the proposal, yeah, it definitely comes from that anxiety. But it's mixing with real feelings too, right? He does love Belly, but the way he shows it, that urgency, that intensity, it's so colored by his need for security, his fear of being second best or left behind. It's a potent mix, that genuine feeling and the insecure attachment driving it.
Right. And then there's Belly, Isabel Conklin. The article says she starts out pretty secure, good foundation, stable parents, unconditional love. Seems solid.
Mm-hmm.
But then the whole push and pull with Conrad really throws her off balance. It causes this, like, shift in her.
Yeah, and this is where it gets super interesting, I think. Beyond just saying Belly shifts, the show kind of challenges this idea that if you start secure, you stay secure no matter what. Belly's story really shows how someone with a solid base can actually have their attachment style reshaped by a relationship, especially with an avoidant partner like Conrad. That constant back and forth, the hot and cold,
yeah,
puts her on edge, makes her doubt herself constantly. Am I good enough? Does he really love me? She gets drawn to the drama, the intensity of chasing Conrad's validation, but then Jeremiah offers this feeling of safety, this loyalty, and that whole messy dynamic pulls her more and more into those anxious, preoccupied ways of thinking and behaving.
Wow, okay. That makes a lot of sense. I kind of always thought secure attachment was like this superpower, you know, like once you have it, you're good. But hearing you explain how that dynamic with an avoidant partner can actually destabilize someone secure, that's really insightful. Can you maybe say a bit more about how that works? Like what's actually happening to change her established pattern?
Yeah, absolutely. So when someone secure gets into a relationship with someone consistently avoidant, their basic needs for connection, for intimacy, for knowing their partner is emotionally there for them, those needs often go unmet, or they get dismissed. A secure person naturally reaches out, right? But the avoidant partner pulls back, gets quiet, maybe intellectualizes things instead of feeling them. And over time, constantly bumping up against that lack of reliable emotional connection, it starts to chip away at the secure person's feeling of safety in the relationship and maybe even their self-worth. They might start thinking, is it me? Am I too needy? Or they start seeing the distance as a sign that the person's gonna leave. So they get anxious. They might start trying harder, performing almost, to get attention or reassurance. They become preoccupied with the relationships like Belly does with Conrad. It's a really common, sadly painful pattern.
That really clarifies it. And yeah, it feels like a dynamic we've all probably seen somewhere, maybe even felt. But the story doesn't stop at the main three, does it? The article cleverly uses this same lens on the supporting characters, too, which shows how deep these patterns run. And this is where it gets really interesting for me. Let's talk about Taylor, Gully's best friend, all that confidence. But the article says she's anxious, preoccupied underneath. What in her background points to that?
Well, her background really tells the story there. The article mentions her childhood wasn't exactly stable. Her mom was apparently more like a friend. Stepdad's kind of drifted in and out. So Taylor often had to step up, look after herself, and sometimes her mom too. Now, that can make you independent, sure, but it also plants these deep seeds of insecurity, that fear that people won't stick around, that you can't really rely on anyone.
Right. And yet what we see is this super bold, flirty, fiercely loyal person. She's got this sharp wit, seems so cool and unaffected, magnetic, really. The article says she steals every scene. But what you're saying is that sparkle, that teasing edge, it's like protective armor, hiding all this insecurity underneath, feelings of not being good enough, fear of being abandoned, all stemming from that unstable childhood. So she acts tough, but inside she's looking for safety and terrified of getting hurt.
Precisely. That bravado is a defense mechanism. She might push buttons, flirt aggressively, tease, but often it's like a subconscious test. Will you still like me even if I act like this? Will you stick around? She wants connection desperately, but she's scared of the vulnerability it takes.
Okay. And then there's Steven, Billy's brother, the avoidant comedian. Oh, we know this type, right? Always ready with a joke, especially when things get heavy. It can be charming, but
yeah,
what's it hiding? The article says he uses humor deflection. That's his main way of coping. Leaning avoidant, he'd rather analyze something or make a joke than actually, like, sit with difficult feelings.
Exactly. And the article provides this great way to see his humor, not just as, you know, him being funny. It's a defense, a very well-practiced one. It's like he throws up the shield of wit.
Yeah.
It deflects tough questions, yeah, but also deeper emotional connection. You really see it after Susanna's death. Steven becomes hyper-focused on achievement, future plans, getting into Princeton, his career. He channels the grief into doing things, not feeling things. He looks strong, resilient. But that avoidance, while it seems like strength, often cuts him off from real emotional intimacy.
And you see that play out with Taylor, right? That banter they have, it keeps things light, fun, but it also kind of hints there might be something deeper he just can't or won't fully go there with. The humor keeps it safe, but distant. I wonder, how does that constant humor in serious moments actually affect the people around him? Like Taylor, when maybe she needs something more real.
That's a really insightful question, because while the jokes might break the tension for a second, they can also make other people feel like their deeper feelings aren't welcome or aren't being taken seriously. You know, imagine trying to share something really painful and the person just keeps cracking jokes. So after a while, you might just stop trying to connect on that level. It can create this unspoken rule that deep feelings are off limits, which, yeah, builds emotional walls even with people you're close to. Which kind of leads to this bigger question, doesn't it? How do our coping mechanisms, even ones that seem positive like humor, sometimes act like shields? Shields that stop us from really connecting and maybe keep old wounds from healing. It's a fascinating thing to think about on screen and off.
That is a heavy thought.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing it all together, what does this mean for the whole show? The article really drives home that Susanna's death isn't just something that happens. It's the emotional heart, the undercurrent of everything. It hits every character hard, and how they react just perfectly lines up with their attachment style.
Yeah.
It's like watching psychology in motion.
It absolutely ties it all together. That kind of massive loss just shines a spotlight on their existing patterns, makes them even stronger sometimes. Take Conrad, Mr. Avoidment. He internalizes all that grief, pulls back into silence, carries it all alone, struggles completely internally. On the outside, he looks strong, maybe even cold. But inside, he's falling apart. Totally unable to risk showing vulnerability, asking for comfort. He seems to believe feeling it, showing it, makes him weak.
And then Jeremiah, the anxious, preoccupied one, he does the opposite. He copes by reaching out, by caretaking. He clings to family traditions, tries so hard to make things feel normal again. It's like holding everyone else together is his way of managing his own fear of loss, of abandonment. His grief becomes this intense need for closeness, for proof that he still belongs, that he's still loved and needed. He wants to be the reliable one, the emotionally present one.
And Belly. Remember, her attachment is already shifting towards anxious because of the whole Conrad thing. She's just caught in the middle. Swinging between denying what's happening and feeling desperate, she holds onto memories of Susanna, longs for that feeling of safety from the past. And this huge loss just destabilizes her even more, pushes her further into those anxious ways of coping, searching for some kind of anchor when everything feels like it's floating away.
Even Steven, right, our avoidant comedian, he uses the jokes, the plans, the achievements to kind of sidestep the pain. He gets practical, focuses on the future college career stuff. It looks like resilience, which is great, but the article points out very sharply, I think, that it might mean he's not really processing the emotional hit. He's moving forward, maybe, but skipping over the hard part.
And this ties directly into what the article calls invisible contracts. These unspoken rules and roles within the family, these expectations or burdens that aren't said out loud but everyone feels, they massively influence how each character handles things. Like Conrad, he just automatically steps into that protector role, carries responsibilities way too heavy for a kid his age. His avoidant style makes him seem strong, but he feels trapped by the silent agreement to hold it together for everyone. And you can feel his resentment sometimes, especially towards Jeremiah being more carefree. It shows the huge cost of being the strong one, the one expected to sacrifice his own needs.
That's such a heavy weight for him. Almost tragic how isolating it is. And Jeremiah, his struggle is totally different. He's constantly fighting for his place, for acceptance. He lost his mom, who the article suggests was the one person who really saw him, chose him. So now he's desperate for stability, for validation. His anxious attachment makes him crave being chosen by Belly. Yeah, but also by his dad, maybe, as like the worthy son, the heir. He gets tagged as the Nepo baby, always compared to Conrad, maybe seen as less serious or capable. It makes him feel like he's never quite enough. And by trying so damn hard to prove himself, he might actually lose track of who he really is.
And Belly, she kind of becomes the emotional center point after Susanna's gone, doesn't she? The fulcrum, the article calls it. She's stuck right between the brothers, stuck between the past she misses and this really uncertain future. Her own attachment shifting mirrors that whole teenage search for identity, for security. She's trying to figure out love, grief, and who she is all at the same time. She ends up carrying a lot of the emotional weight of their broken dynamics.
And Steven, our seemingly easygoing guy, he creates distance with the humor, the practicality, avoids getting too vulnerable. He provides that necessary comic relief, fills a role the family maybe relies on without realizing it, the tension breaker. But that avoidance, that barrier, it ultimately gets in the way of real deep connection. He's there, but he's walled off emotionally.
And what's just so fascinating is how these family roles, these invisible contracts, they don't just like exist next to the attachment styles. They actually interact with them, they shape them, they amplify them, especially when everyone's dealing with such a huge loss. It creates this really complex web of relationships, expectations, and emotional debts. It makes each character's journey feel so much more layered, so much more real. We're seeing them not just as individuals, but as part of this whole interconnected family system.
Wow. Okay, so this deep dive really shows it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The Summer I Turned Pretty. It's so much more than just, you know, summer romance. It's this really powerful, pretty complex story about how our attachment patterns, how we deal with grief, mm-hmm. how those things really shape us. From Conrad and Stephen needing distance, to Jeremiah and Taylor needing reassurance, to Belly just trying to find her footing. These characters really hold up a mirror to that universal human struggle.
Yeah.
You know, learning how to love, how to grieve, and hopefully how to heal.
Absolutely. And we really hope listening to this gives you maybe some new ways to think about why characters and, hey, maybe even people in your own life act the way they do. It's like getting a little decoder ring for understanding that complex dance of relationships, those emotional currents running just beneath the surface.
Definitely.
And thinking about all these layers, especially those invisible contracts we talked about, here's something to maybe chew on. In your own life, your own relationships, think about how you present yourself, maybe resilient, maybe a bit distant sometimes. What unspoken, invisible contracts might you be operating under without even realizing it? And how might those subtle agreements be affecting your ability to really, truly connect with the people you care about? Just something to mull over.
Mm-hmm.
Until our next deep dive.